Hello and welcome to episode 215 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mouse from Mars, and joining me this week are the creator of Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And the writer behind Cockney Kung Fu, Tony Esmond.
Hello. I think I should confess at this point that I organised the guest for today, and I'm not going to take the blame completely, but me and him may have completely fucked up the time, because he's Australian.
We do not know yet. We do not know yet. This could be happening live and direct. But yes, this week on the Awesome Pod is hopefully going to be another week of the comic book making process.
Yes.
The past couple of weeks, thank you to all the new listeners and the nice words on the first 2 weeks that were about writing and artwork. This week, we're planning to focus on colouring. Now, we've had some sort of guests. Well, we've been really trying hard to get a creator on to talk to us, and a new voice as well, because we're all like getting the new voices.
We've had some great colorists on the show: Michael K. Russell, Chris Jenkins,
Sean Dobie,
Dobes. Yeah, there's been loads.
Yeah, so but we wanted another sort of angle to it, so we've been contacting quite a few sort of colorists, and trying to get something to work, and we got one.
I have an update.
You do?
Yeah, just come in. I've just sent it to you. That that sounded good. That was like we planned that. How exciting was that?
I know, that was amazing.
Yeah, it would appear that I've definitely got the time wrong and he's still asleep. although he has texted me to say he's still asleep. I had it down as 5:30 and I said, farts, I got the wrong time. We've started. Just join us when you're up. No rush. Emoji thumbs up.
Okay.
That's the kind of the cool guy I am. That's what's happened.
He's a legend for texting in his sleep.
Fucking hell, what a big old geezer. Yeah. Let's hold our water around that, my friends, and we can announce the big announce when he comes on, has that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah.
So it's exciting, isn't it? It's exciting. It's happening. It's like the moon landing.
Yeah.
But podcasts about comics.
For us.
Yeah.
A listener.
Yeah,
sort of is.
Yeah, so this is like a true live podcast experience in a sense, because we have to do things on the fly. But in advance, thank you very much to our guests for joining us this week, for helping us out.
I've got an update.
Another one. Hang on, where your phone didn't go out. I'm not going to know you got updates if it's not making that.
Because I've got it on mute because I'm a podcast professional. But he's now in the shower.
Oh Christ! He's not going to Skype us from in there, is he?
I hope so. They're very open-minded, the Australians.
Oh, he's going to be with us. Excellent.
Yeah.
Oh, splendid, splendid.
What a dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, what a dude.
It's 4:30 a.m.
Yeah. and yes, exactly. I mean, he's not so much a dude as an absolute fucking legend. And do you know what?
I'd like to point out that we are incredibly unprofessional, and he is clearly professional.
He is professional. And to test Tony's professionalism, Tony's going to have the job of introducing him when he joins us.
Yes, bring it. I'm ready.
You were born ready. Crackerjack timing. But before that, and us talking about the comic book colouring process, how are we, gents? Are we all right?
Yeah, good. I've been to the Comic Mart today.
Oh, yeah, you have indeed. Do you know where else you can get comics?
Is it Comic House?
It is indeed our sponsor, Comic House.
Oh yeah,
as our loyal listeners
know. Is it full of like really overweight, underweight, weird blokes who smell quite badly of BO?
No, it's just full of amazing indie
far
comics.
Far superior then.
It's just full of amazing indie comics from all over the world, actually. Yes, and they are our sponsor. God bless them. And they're a brilliant marketplace online. There's a huge selection of titles on there. Lots of self-published creators list their books up there for free. It's just another avenue for you to be able to sell your book and to get your work out there. But they also have an app which we're checking out, which we're talking about all the time, and we check out all the time because it's titles are growing, the list of titles. In fact, I've got a few titles on there that I'm going to be checking out over the next few weeks. That have just been added, which I'm quite looking forward to.
There's a lot of good reads on there now. There's a load of like long trades and stuff you can
a lot of people sort of put their collections on there rather than just individual issues as well, isn't it? I've noticed a lot of trades have gone on, which is quite exciting. It's like Netflix basically. Yeah. Oh, Don't start that. It's like Netflix, basically. It's a subscription service, only £3 a month. This is what I have to put... Any new listeners, this is what I have to put up with every week. Old Muttley over there, trying to put off my...
I found the best photograph of us ever.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. You did.
Yeah.
But
I was very pleased. I can still be Sid James.
You're going to have to explain that joke later on. Okay. Yes, yeah, so Comic House. There's loads of digital titles on there that you can check out. Dan Butcher, what's on there at the moment?
We've got Away Issue 1, The Hammer Volume 1, Issue 1, Another Dimension. This is for Marcosia, as is Zero Jumper Volume 1, Madison Dark, another Marcosia, Jamshide Issue 1, Soulbound 1, and Surrealsville Issue 14.
Nice. A host of others. Rewind. Do you say Jamicide? Is that like homicide using jam?
Oh, my word. What a way to go.
Jamshide is Jamshid.
I want to explore Tony's concept.
That's a Marcosia title as well. Yeah. Has any published last year?
What do you think's the worst jam like to be murdered by?
I don't know.
Seedless.
I'm not a big fan of jams. I'll be honest with you. I quite like marmalade.
Hang on, 215 weeks, and now you're dropping this shit on us.
Well, you live on jam in the countryside, so jam and sugar.
Don't give me that. You live in a prep.
We have peanut butter and Marmite mixed up together in jars in Lidl, whatever it is.
Oh, God.
I barked in a car park Lidl yesterday.
You're one of those people that shops in Lidl but takes a Waitrose bag, aren't you?
I know the first time I've ever been into a Lidl car park was Friday. And it was like...
We don't want to know this story, you disgusting,
my car's going to get damaged by some fat people getting out of their cars next to it, and I drove away.
Didn't even get out.
No, I thought, I don't want them. They drove up really close, and I thought, yeah, they should be able to get out there. Then I saw the size of them. I thought, now I'm going to need to reverse out of this space.
if you have any complaints, just email... Tony.AwesomeComicsPod. Nope, it's Tony.AwesomeComicsPod@gmail.com. That's what it is.
That could be our next comic, Fat People in Cars.
No.
They're easy to draw.
Says the man who's clearly never drawn a car.
I've never drawn a car. No, I've drawn some trees.
Yeah, you've drawn trees.
Yeah.
I drew a certain picture of that man whose Kickstarter I backed recently. I drew a lovely picture of him.
That was good.
It was a bit trippy, wasn't it?
You're like Bob Ross, aren't you, Tony?
What, sorry?
You're like Bob Ross.
Who's Bob Ross? I know who he is. Gaffer, that he's with the big hair. Yeah, I know. Yeah, a little bit. I'm more like the Reeves and Mortimer of painting. Is it Vic Reeves reckons he can paint and it's all pretty terrible? Isn't that the one?
Yeah.
You know, celebrities all go, oh, I'm really into painting, and they have an exhibition, you go along on it. What, do you finger paint that with your knob? That looks terrible.
How do you finger paint with your... No, I'm not... No, don't engage.
I like... Was it one of the crazed did painting in prison?
Right.
It's always like this thing of like, so what do you think of this then? Oh, that's great. Yeah, it's great. Because if you fucking said anything else, you get shanked.
get a Chelsea smile for not liking his picture of a bowl of fruit.
Yeah, but I tell you what, though. What else makes you smile is Comic House. And you can find out more about the 14-day free trial... The 14-day free trial and the service itself at comichouse.com. No matter what you bastards do, I will make it through these ads.
That's the best day ever. It's been the best day ever already today. Vince got me to fix my computer by telling me to tap one of the keys constantly, and it worked. I thought he was just winding me up.
Yeah.
Yeah, went all right.
So tell us about the comic, Mark. That's where you've been today.
Yeah, it was good, actually. Yeah, I went along. I saw John Bishop from a distance a couple of times. I kept trying to find him, and then he kept disappearing. He's a man of mystery, John Bishop, but he's a Comic Mart regular and a man of taste. Who incidentally, I bought some Wizard magazines because I fancied reading some old Wizard magazines, and one arrived and it was from John. Do we know?
Oh, nice one,
amazing.
Yeah, and he said. He sent me some crazy back issues along with it as well as a little gift. What good geezer.
I had to pony up a load of Wizard magazines as a sacrifice because the wife was sort of saying, look, we need to get rid of some stuff. And it was like either comics or Wizard magazine, as I ask. It has to be Wizard magazine.
Oh, mate, I bet you're kicking yourself now.
I offered him to Orbital for free. I said, look, I've got about 30 or 40 Wizard magazines. Do you want them? And I went, no, not really. So I recycled them.
Before we knew... Oh, you knew me, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it was.
Oh, I fucked up there, didn't I? It clearly wasn't. Yeah, because it's...
Fucked up there.
Oh, well. Anyway, the coin mark was good. There was a few... It wasn't too hot today because it's a bit of rain. But there was a few people who penned and inked, I've got to tell you. That's it.
It's like a feverish heat that pumps off of them. It is.
I went, Adam Fowl was there, and Sarah Harris, looking very well, good to see her.
Nice one.
Was there as well, and we went for a coffee in this little cafe on the come out and right, and we sat in there, and sort of four, let's call them older, it's quite raggedy looking gentlemen came out who'd been in there, because you can buy DVDs and stuff in there as well, can't you? And one of them opened a bag and he had like a VHS porn film he was showing his mates, and I thought, that's class, isn't it?
VHS.
That is old school.
You don't get 4K and VHS, let me tell you that, folks.
No.
Sorry,
you
don't
get a dirty brown eye close up on a VHS, do you?
Oh, you do not.
Oh my God.
Can't pick out the detail. It's hardly worth it.
Where did it all go wrong? I'm just.
Show one.
I bought some DVDs.
Oh, what did you get?
I bought Della Morte Della More, which is the Cemetery Man, which is Dog movie on Shameless DVD. That's class, isn't it?
Nice.
And I bought Chopping, as in Chopping, Chopping Mall.
Nice one.
Yeah, watch that on the Red Letter Media thing. That looks really good.
Oh, right. Okay. I'll give that a go. Yeah, so I've got to do quite a lot of work for my computer at home that's sort of fairly sort of boring and laborious this week, so I'll have a film on in the background because I can't always concentrate. But if it's like crap, like doing your accounts or something, it's easier, isn't it? You know what I mean? I bought quite a lot of comics. I bought a load of... I filled in all my holes. Ooh. Eternal Warrior. Sarah Harris managed to buy a Hawkman issue from the 60s. I think she's bought it three times, so I swapped her a copy of The Moth for that. That was quite cool.
Nice.
I got... I like to give out little very cheap presents. I got Falpia 25p Rob Liefeld comic, which you commented on, I think, earlier, didn't you, Dan?
Yeah, I've... Simon.
Yes, hello.
Hey, look at that.
Hey! Fucking hell. I'm really sorry, man. I'm sorry.
You're a bloody ledge.
I wouldn't expect anything less.
This is a first for the Awesome Comics Pod.
Yes. We've been doing a little running commentary about he's up, he's in the shower any minute. We've been doing a bit of that. It's very exciting.
Yes. So Tony, who's joining us this week?
Oh, joining us is Simon Robbins. If you've read Digitopia, a comic we've talked a lot about on the pod, or if you're a fan of the Full Moon universe and the fact that Doll Man went and killed everyone, you'll have seen Simon Robbins's colour work. Yeah, thanks for coming on, man. It's real, real pleasure.
No problem at all. Good morning, all.
good morning indeed. Dear Lord, you are a saint.
Simon comes from Bournemouth, where it is, in fact, 4:30 in the morning.
Seriously, though, thank you very much for joining us this week.
Not a problem at all.
I have this image of you going back to bed and then waking up later and going, what the fuck happened earlier?
I won't remember any of this until I actually turn on the comic pod next week and go, oh shit, I was on that.
That's what happens to all our guests. We're kind of like a podcast for hypno, aren't we, really?
without the raping, come on.
Hey, I'm not going down. I'm not taking that any further. Yes.
Yeah, you can take Rohypnol for other reasons. That's why it exists. You don't have to be a rapist. And Simon's very kindly come in the nick of time because our previous guest couldn't do it to talk about comic book colouring. Very exciting.
Yes.
Yeah, no, it's a pleasure to be on.
And it's a pleasure to have you here. So we were worried that our series of the comic making process was going to be derailed in only a third week.
By leaving it to me.
No, Tony, you stepped up, you worked hard, and you got us a brilliant, brilliant guest. So that's
amazing. We did. So, we were thinking, who can we get? And then I went, why have we never thought of this before? Because Simon's been active on the message board and, you know, the Facebook group, and we've been chatting to him for a while now. And we were extremely excited when you worked for Full Moon. That was very exciting.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So it was like it was meant to be. And
And the stars aligned in the end. It's all good.
Quite literally, because it's probably quite still dark where you are.
Yeah, you have to watch out for dingoes.
No, look, he's already talking to three, so it doesn't matter. Anyway, so as I said, it's part three of our series on the comic making process. And we hope everyone has enjoyed the previous two parts, as we said earlier. So this week, we're moving on to the next stage. And I tell you what, this process batch of shows is doing quite well. Thank you to everyone, the uptake. We love talking about the process, so it's nice to see that.
Yeah.
Some fresh ears are listening to it as well, and hopefully sort of learning some stuff, even if it's just, God, these three don't know what they're talking about. At least the guest did.
That's why we've got a guest on.
Exactly. But this week's stage is the one that not every comic needs. In fact, in the past, the world of small press and self-publishing, everything was in black and white, pretty much. everything.
Yeah.
But especially in the modern age of digital artwork and delivery, more and more creators and books are utilising the art of colouring. Like all stages of comic making, it can good colouring can take your breath away for the right reasons, or bad colouring can make you turn away for the wrong. So, you know, it's like every stage of making a comic book, every stage is important, and colouring has just come on leaps and bounds.
To me, it's almost, as a colourist, you're at the end of the process, and you must be thinking, I really can't fuck this up. Yeah. We've got some great writing, some great eyes, you know, the line work on it. And they're leaving it to me. Yeah.
The colouring.
I think there is definitely a sense of that pressure, I guess, but it's the same for, I guess, the writer and the artist. Are just different kinds of pressures, I guess. And in a way, the further down the line you've gone, the more you've got to work with, I guess.
I suppose the other worry is the deadline issue is if the writer's a bit late, the artist is even a bit more late, then they're gonna want you to like pull your finger out, aren't they, often?
Yeah, no, it is I guess quite common for us to have very short deadlines, and I mean also thought to the letterers who are after us as well quite often. So you know, that kind of compounds for them as well. But you know, if it's managed right, then you know, it should go smoothly. I mean, I've had occasions where it's been very much down to the line, or even, you know, I've had to kind of extend deadlines. But it's, you know, you work to with what you've got, and you try and do your best. And sometimes, you know, just you've got to go for quality over the time as well. So you've just got to have to ask for a little bit longer to get the quality that's needed.
One of the things I find, like as a colorist, you've got to make a lot of kind of informed decisions about the work you're coloring, where some may have like a really oversaturated color palette. Some might be really watered down and kind of washed out, like watercolor style. And also, like, your colouring style can affect how a comic page or panel plays out. So if you kind of, like, infused it with a ton of reds or a ton of blues, it would be read differently by the reader. So I guess you have to take...
Colour theory is a big thing, isn't it? It really is, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. No, that's definitely true.
So, all right, then. To actually kick us off, like, where do we properly start? Okay, let's get to the actual process itself. So you've got a page of black and white artwork in front of you, like maybe it's your own, maybe you're working on someone else's work, depending on who's listening to this. So you get the black and white artwork. What's the first thing you do, like, just in general? It could be emails, it could be actually working on the artwork. What's your process for when you get a page through?
Well, usually the first thing I'll do is see if there's any existing colouring for that series. If you're picking up after someone else, I usually have a look and see what's kind of come beforehand. And I think then really it's hopefully you've been given a script that you can read the script, which happens probably 90% of the time. Usually you have the script. Sometimes it just doesn't ever eventuate, which makes life quite hard. And then I would probably... touch base with the artist or the writer, depending who's driving the actual comic, and see if they have any preconceptions of what they wanted. And usually they say that prior to that stage anyway. They'll kind of give you an idea if they've got you know, a style that you've done, or a style that they've seen, or even just any kind of input, really. And then it's kind of, I guess, playing around with a palette and getting an idea of what will work best alongside a style, whether it's going to be a brushy style or it's going to be a cut and grade style, what actually works best with the artwork.
So immediately, and I think this is going to be a recurring theme through all of these process shows, the first thing and the most important thing is communication, isn't it, really? That's the first thing. That's the first thing you go for. How soon do you like to have a script before you even see artwork or start work? In an ideal world, how soon would you like it?
Oh, sorry, that's my alarm telling me it's my time to get up.
He's done it on purpose.
No, I was in the shower and I thought I should turn that off, and I didn't. So it's anyway. Now I've completely forgotten what the question was you asked.
I tell you what, I'm just leaving that in because that was amazing.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. How soon do you like to see a script? I mean, you know, if you do receive a script, how much time would you like to look at a script of a project before actually sort of starting any kind of work in an ideal world?
Well, in an ideal world, you'd get the script, you know, the minute that you've actually been signed on to the job.
Right.
Because you could read it in your spare time and spend the time between, you know, receiving the script and receiving the artwork to kind of just have that brewing in your mind. And, you know, quite often you have got that in the back of your mind thinking about something, and just, you know, when you're looking around other comics or reading comics, you think, oh, that might work well.
Yeah.
In a realistic world, you generally get it at the same time as the artwork. Obviously, beforehand would be best, but, you know, as long as it's not after you finish the job.
I can't imagine that, but has that actually happened then?
I generally don't get it after the job, but there are plenty of jobs where you have to actually chase it down. And if you don't chase it down, you'll never have been supplied it. I think it depends probably on how many jobs a writer has done. Because generally, they know that colorists like to have the script and will supply. I still have to chase them quite regularly.
See, I think that's an important tip for anyone out there who's putting together like a team. I mean, some people may think it's a no-brainer to send a script and the artwork to the entire team, but some people obviously may not. So, you know, if you want your work to look the best it can, then supply everyone everything.
Oh yeah, I think it's a no-brainer. You got to send a full script, and if you've got a bit of a Bible going on, send it out to the colorists as well. I know I did some work with Dobes recently, and I sent him everything I had. You know, you've got to see it. It's part of the storytelling, isn't it? You know?
You can basically never send too much. You're never going to get a colorist go, oh, you're giving me too much. You know, I guess depending on how particular you are about certain scenes and stuff as well, reference material is really good if you have something particular in mind. You know, sometimes that's taken and run with as well. It's not necessarily abided to 100% if there's a better solution that is there.
Mm. Yeah.
Do you offer many alternatives to a writer and artist? Do you say, have you ever said, for example, this could be a two colour wash, or, you know, this should be more at night, we should tone down the light in the room, or, you know, does that back and forth happen much?
In some respects, yeah, definitely. You think, for example, you might have done something recently with Ryan K. Lindsay where he's got the time frame is like basically like a Tarantino a script, but, you know, if he's been drinking drinking a lot. not that he does, sorry, Ryan.
He's been on the cut of the sides. We know
he's right. Basically, more like a Tarantino script with absinthe chucked in there.
Right.
And
Christ.
It's got a lot of different lines. And between panels, it switches, you know, probably 50, 100 years. So it was really quite important to show that passage of time. And instead of having to put a caption on every one saying this is 50 years later, this is 100 years later, which I think we're still doing, but it slows down the process.
Yeah.
So I suggested that we use completely different palettes for each timeline, so that once the reader gets a few pages in, they understand that that's the time jumping around. So there'll be like one that's almost a sepia wash, which is quite far ago in the past. And then there's ones in the future, which will be more kind of, I guess, hyper psychedelic colors.
Yeah. I think that's important. I think a lot of books you see using that now, using different color palettes for different times, locations, you know, stuff like that. It happens an awful lot now.
Yeah, I think it's a great. I mean, it also happens in film as well.
You
get your flashbacks and stuff, and they might be a wash or
just
the
black
colours
and white, maybe.
It's a visual language that I think pretty much everyone can understand, isn't it? Like colour and that sort of. You know, as soon as I see a page in a comic book where it's predominantly red, my brain immediately switches into like, you know. Normally with a comic book, something bad is happening or something really intense or angry is happening. It's a very, you know, colours are a very emotional thing, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's that saying that if there's a lot of purple, someone's going to die as well.
God.
I think, yeah.
Look out, it's a Prince.
I can remember reading, like, it was either this week or last week, one of the colourists was saying online or Twitter, somebody saying about it's a real noob thing to do is to put a lot of purple, because you don't see purple a lot in nature, so people overuse it in coloring and on comics and covers and stuff. And I didn't really ever consider that. It's not something I've ever really noticed.
I guess
me neither.
Nick Filardi, colorist, wrote a tweet about that recently, and I guess it falls down to the color palette in Photoshop leans towards purple.
Right.
The more color you add into something, and if you're going for a darker mood, it goes towards purple. So if you end up with a folio that's predominantly purple, it could be an indication that you're not paying as much attention and you're just kind of letting the palette slide into that color right. range. So it's not so much, I guess, a conscious I'm going to make everything purple. It just seems to happen that way. And since Nick has said that, I've kind of noticed even more that it's true. So I guess that's more an indication of what that's about. And there have been certain publishers that have posted jobs on Twitter or whatever saying, I'm after a colorist who can not use purple or use purple to a minimal
amount. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think as well it's important to note that purple is also a really awesome color to use as well.
Oh,
but
yeah.
It's just about bring it and knowing when to use it, when not to, and not to fall into an easy kind of an easy path, I guess.
I guess it's that new orange and teal thing. Used to see everywhere on film posters and putting orange and blue together. I mean, I've got in certain characters in Vanguard, everyone has a kind of two colours and one of them who is kind of like the more dubious natured guy, he's like dark and a light purple because he wanted something unsettling and not quite what, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I mean, in character design, you know, if you think back to like, you know, the Golden Age or, you know, when Marvel kicked off in the 60s, you know, green and purple were, you know, a lot of villains.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I know the Hulk eventually became green with purple trousers, but maybe he's an exception to the rule, but so many villains were green and purple, weren't they? You know, whereas the heroes were, what colour were the heroes? Was it
red, white, and blue, my friend?
Yeah.
That is kind of true as well, isn't it?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that blurs a bit these days with obviously with character costumes, designs, colour palettes, you know, and because a lot of heroes, they ride that middle line, don't they?
I mean, there is a change. There's a real shift, isn't there? Where comic characters were, let's face it, mostly the pulp or superhero characters. And the iconography of them was down to a very bright costume. So the reader could tell immediately who they were and what they were doing.
Yeah.
In the UK and America, I'm talking. But the shift has come now where we've got a lot of characters in suits. Yeah, we've got a lot of characters in casual clothes, and you know, even some of the superheroes are wearing sort of jackets and you know stuff like that.
Yeah.
So the iconography is changing, and therefore the coloring detail needs to up its game as well as the artwork, so that we can pick out who's who on a page. It's become more difficult, I'll be honest with you, recently.
Yeah, and I think you need to be aware of that history of the colours that are associated with, you know, each side of the I guess, the good and bad.
Yeah, okay.
And, I mean, you can also use that as a play on it as well. You can have a good character and decide to use an evil colour scheme, and it may work, and it may lead to down the path he actually is a bad person or something. So there's I mean, if you're aware of all that stuff, you can use it in interesting ways in colouring too.
Yeah, that's really interesting, man. Yeah,
I don't want to sound like a massive hypocrite here, but I'm not really overly keen on pages that have tons and tons of effects and lens flares and stuff, even though I do that shit all the time myself. Sometimes there's sort of like a line which I'm like, okay, that's you've gone too far there with that, and not a fan of it. And it kind of, it's always modern stuff, and when they do, I think we discussed it before, but older comics, when they've recolored it in a modern style, it just does not fly for me at all.
Yeah, I mean, there's ways you can use that to a very subtle extent, and there's ways that are really in your face, and that does kind of, I guess, almost pull you out of the comic when you're reading it. It's kind of like it makes it very obvious of the tool that's been used and how it's been done, and that can take you out of the whole experience, I think. But if you look at the latest Tico, the Sara one.
So good.
Great.
Yeah.
Brett Weiser in there uses very subtle flares over the inks and stuff to show the sun rising and to increase that kind of sense of atmosphere. And if it's done well, it can really enhance a comic, but it's like anything. If you do it too much or over the top or done badly, then it can be adverse and have the opposite effect.
Mm-hmm. One thing I've walked back as well, like from a couple of years ago, I used to use a lot of textures in my stuff. So, like, I've got whole folders of, like, textures that I've accumulated. But then just feel like it's a lot more work, and every character's got their own texture and this and that, and it just ends up adding a lot, but just muddying up the work.
Do you feel as if you like them less as your confidence in your own colouring has grown as well, though? Do you know what I mean? You feel like, oh, I could do that better rather than relying on the texture.
I feel like the same way as, like, line work. I feel like if you can do less lines and still get the character across, that's for me the way to go. And same with the colouring. If it's kind of, I don't know, not all the bells and whistles, but still, like Kingdom, for instance, the colour in that is very, very minimal and the palette's cut right back, but it does exactly what it needs to do and it does it well.
Yeah.
No, I think sometimes the artwork can determine that as well. You'll see artwork where, you know, definitely if you put the texture in, it'll be obvious and maybe detract from it. And there'll be other artwork that might be maybe more inky and more messy, for sake of a better term. That's where a texture may be used in there more effectively and I guess blend in a little better as well. So I guess it's a balancing act. I mean, I use textures and I use them quite a bit, but it's a matter of making sure, again, that it doesn't pull the reader out of that experience of actually reading the comic and being inside the story and them going, oh, there's a texture, they've used Photoshop, oh, I'm out of the story now, you know, so.
It ties into the artwork as well. I mean, I know certainly comics like The Fix from Image, which is, I love the book. And if you look closely at, like, some of the shirts, just say it's a tartan pattern shirt, there's no, it seems to be a flat tartan pattern. There's no thinking about how the arm bends or anything like that, but it works perfectly with the art style. It doesn't detract from anything. It just flows. But not everyone can get that. For instance, if you had a Joe Madureira kind of artwork, and you put just a flat texture on it without thinking about where the arm bends or how everything moves, it's just going to look terrible. You know, you have to think about the art has to work with the colours, doesn't it? You know, in that respect.
Yeah. Have you got any? What sort of style of artwork do you enjoy colouring the most? I mean, we've got the range out there from sort of cartoony to super realistic to what sort of thing do you enjoy the most, Simon?
I don't know if I've got a particular style of art that I would enjoy more than another. It just has to be done well, I guess. And the artists have to have a sense of maybe thinking about this is going to be coloured. And doing the artwork in a way that is, if they're putting shadows in, the shadows are consistent. There's a sense of a light source always helps.
So for those artists, then here's a good way to get some tips. You know, if you're an artist and you know your work's gonna be coloured by someone else, what tips or what would a colourist like to see in the artwork that they're going to receive that's going to make their life easier?
Well, I guess as I said, if you're putting in shadows and distinct light sources, that they're consistent, that they work within the scene. If it's like a middle of the day scene and you've got shadows that are jumping all over the place, then it can make it very tricky. If you've got multiple light sources, if they're not consistent, it starts to become really tricky to kind of color it, because it becomes more and more obvious, I think, when you put the colors in. I mean, it's probably still obvious in the artwork. It becomes more obvious when you've got, you know, give us a few extra gray hairs, I think, when that stuff comes.
Yeah.
But I guess really consistency is the main thing, and just a sense of keeping in mind that there's other people who need to come after you and add the colour and make sure that their job is made easier by the consistency of the light, of your brush strokes or inking or whatever. But I think as long as they're consistent, colourists can work with it. It's when you get inconsistencies possibly as well, you know, you get a scene that might be an emotional scene which needs to be a bit quieter, then I guess, I mean, artists are going to draw that. They know that better than I do. So if you don't draw that effectively in a way that, you know, you can colour it to, I guess, create the emotion. We can work with any artwork, really, but it's just trying to make it easier for us is always appreciated.
Okay, that's interesting.
What do you prefer to draw? A colour, splash pages, or a page with like plenty of panels? Just off the top of your head.
Probably sequentials. Pages, lots of panels. That's, I guess, where you can really tell the story more and use the colour to move the eye through the page and communicate the emotion. But that said, it's always fun to do a splash page, and I love them. And I wouldn't put one as being favourite over the other. It's I just wouldn't want to do as many splash pages. So in a way, I guess sequentials would be more preferable.
Yeah,
but
splash pages are an important part of comics, but they have to be used at the right time.
Yeah,
don't
they? Would you mind if I just ask a little bit about your origin story? Because you've been colouring now, what, 3 or 4 years? Is it something like that, probably?
No, it's probably only coming up to about 2.5, 3 years now.
No, really? Because you're quite prolific. Funny enough, I've got Gods of Men sitting next to me, because I talked about it, I think, week before last.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, so you did... it's Simon Robbins, colourist.
Oh, nice one.
So you're certainly colouring a lot, aren't you? Both small press, and, you know, you've worked for the bigger companies now as well. How did... What is your origin story, Raddy? I take it you were a comics fan initially, where you were.
Yeah, well, I guess to go right back, I first discovered comics by going to a local show or fair or whatever you want to call it, and getting a show bag that had the untold legend of the Batman comic in it, which was a short miniseries out on DC, which had John Byrne and Jim Aparo did the artwork, and it was a great story, which kind of went into the background of Batman, and that kind of really just grabbed my attention, and just loved the whole concept of comics after reading that. And then got right into 2000 AD because it was easy to get up. That was kind of stocked in accessible places over here back in the 80s, and myself and my brother collected a lot of that, and from that we kind of moved into... And I mean, a lot of credit goes to my brother, my older brother, who is a mad comic collector, and he spent all his hard-earned cash on comics. I spent mine on other things. and then we got into Vertigo stuff like Sandman and Hellblazer, The Invisibles, and Preacher.
Oh, cool.
That kind of got me into the edgier edgier side of comics. But there's, well, there's kind of the classics like Cerebus and Bone as well. And then I guess from that, I mean, to give an idea of probably where a lot of my interest in colour came from, I'd say it would have been probably the stuff by Simon Bisley and Dave McKean.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And,
just, I'm a big McKean fan, man. He's great. And he just...
Yeah, and stuff like his Arkham Asylum and then Bisley's obviously Slain.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And Batman... Work. The Batman and Dread one, is it Judgment on Gotham, I think it was?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
And then from that falling into probably around the same time was into Image when Spawn first started off and Wildcats and stuff like that. So where I guess my grounds are. Fairly heavy basis in UK comics in terms of 2000 AD was really fundamental in my early
have
years.
Have you worked for them yet, or have you? Or...
No, I haven't. Oh, I'd love to. I recently did a quick color sketch. I'm trying to do little kind of warm ups occasionally, which are like between half an hour and an hour, where I just kind of get a pin up or a cover and do a quick color on it. And I did one of Judge Death recently, and
nice.
And just the characters there. I mean, working on that, taking me right back to my early days in comics. I was like, yeah, God, I'd love to actually colour one of these things. if they're listening, anyway.
Yeah, I'm sure they are.
But yeah, and then I went to art school studying fine art and majoring in photography. When I finished that, realised that a career in fine art photography meant either, you know, being destitute or doing wedding photography. Neither of those really appealed to me. So I kind of landed in graphic design because I'd done a digital photography folio in college, which was my final end of year. And that would have been about 96, I guess, thereabouts, 95, 96, 97. I can't remember, but it was the first real digital folio where I did basically a photo montage using Photoshop, and it was a sequential series of panels that all told a story. So in effect, a photographic comic. The head of the art school completely just did not really get it, and basically told me it wasn't photography, which in a way is kind of right. It was, I guess, an extension on photography, I thought, but I really didn't get a great response from the head of my department. Was really good. Head of photography was cool about it. It was the head of art that just didn't really get into it. And so that made the transition into graphic design probably easier for me, because I felt that probably I didn't need to go down the art side of things. I've done graphic design for 20 years, and I did my master's probably about a bit shy of 10 years ago, and I did it as communication design, but I focused on the, the illustrative and communicative power of comics, which took me full circle right back to comics again.
Nice.
I thought when I was doing that all my graphic design experience, I could easily letter a comic.
Yeah.
And that's what I started doing, was lettering a couple of comics, and then Farhan came to me with Digitopia. I put in there to letter Digitopia, and I got the job to letter it. And then he was looking for a colorist, and I thought, what the heck, I'll give it a go. And he was really happy with the colors and said, you know, if I want, I can color and letter the comic. And I said,
nice.
Sure, you know, that I'll give that a go. And I found coloring really took me back to photography. When you compose a studio shot in photography, you've got to think about the lighting, and even when you're out shooting in the streets and stuff as well, but probably more in a controlled environment, doing a studio shoot. And you've got to think about color temperatures. You've got to think about whether you put in, you know, some gels to change the color of the lights, all that kind of stuff. And when I was coloring those test pages for Farhan, I'm just like, I really love this. Like it's like, being a photographer, but also being involved in comics and taking my experience in graphic design. So it was like a full, I guess, amalgamation of everything I'd done up to that point. And in a way, it was the best way to work in it because it wasn't commercial like wedding photography, which I really was not interested in. I got sick of a lot of aspects of design in terms of the, I guess, the commercial side of that. And you put all this time into doing an advert for someone and that's the last you hear of it and it's gone forever.
Yeah.
As comics, you coloring a comic, you end up with a story that hopefully people get more out of than just, I want to buy this or I want to sell this. You're telling a story that it gives pleasure to people and joy to people. And in yeah. terms of myself, you know, it really was just, I guess, the ultimate career for me. And I just happened to kind of be fortunate enough that Farn gave me the chance to do colours and it just all worked. And that's where I am now, really.
And as I understand it, we find you had to almost like pitch yourself to the project, because I know on your website you've got some test pages you sent him, is that right?
Yeah, so he had decided on the artist who was Sebastian Perez out of Argentina,
yeah,
who I kind of helped with the selection of him as well.
Okay,
brought me on first as a letterer. It was Farhan's first comic, and totally to his credit, he was wanting to surround himself with people who are passionate about it and that
yeah,
would invest.
We're friends with Ryan. He actually came to the 200th as well. We talked about it with him a couple of times. Yeah, no, an interesting project. Yeah.
So he's not a writer that thought that he knew best. He was very much wanting to evolve and learn with other artists that were, I guess, cool. In fairly early stages of their career. And so he brought myself and Sebastian on and the art tests that I did were Sebastian's artwork, and Sebastian came back and said that he really liked the style of colouring and it worked really well with his art. That was, I guess, when Farhan agreed to bring me on as the colourist, and I discovered that I enjoyed it more than the lettering. I still enjoy lettering, and I think it's a very underappreciated art in comics, both financially and artistically. I think they're just thought of that they just throw the letters on and it's done. But, you know, it's letterers definitely need a lot more kind of accolades and a lot more appreciation for what they're doing.
Yeah, I've been noticing it recently this week. I know we're going to talk about it probably next week, but there's been a lot of bad lettering, even in high profile sort of big company books about at the moment. Yeah.
It makes the whole thing look really amateurish if the letterings, it kind of, such an easy thing to get right and get wrong simultaneously.
Yeah.
And that's a major responsibility to have as well, because, you know, everyone else can put so many hours into a comic book. I mean, the artist and the colorist, I mean, both putting so many hours in. And then if a letterist comes in and just makes a dog's dinner of it, everyone else's work is kind of, I guess, depreciated by that.
Yeah.
There was a guy who was posting up pages on the Facebook independent comic creators group, and to save money he was like trying to letter the pages himself, and he'd paid like someone to do the artwork and the coloring, and they both looked great, and then he tried to do the lettering. It was really amateurish. It was like, thankfully he kind of took on the criticisms of people saying, look, you need to get this done right, and he did, and it was like a million times better.
Have you ever had to go in and fix anyone else's colors, Simon? I know it's has anyone said to you, oh, can you have a look at this?
No, I haven't had that come up. I know it may on occasion happen. I don't think it's that.
Yeah.
More often, I have had people come and say, can you completely redo something? It's not really fixing someone else's colours. It's just kind of starting from scratch.
Okay, yeah.
Which I'd be much more comfortable than fixing someone else's colours, because it's kind of like a bit of a rabbit hole to disappear down, I think. So once you start fixing a little bit...
That's dangerous turf, isn't it?
And when you fix something here, then that might all of a sudden look a lot better than the previous page, and then you end up having to fix everything, and it's probably more work to do that than to get someone to just recolor the whole thing in a way.
So you get to choose who would be your, let's say top three artists that you would like die to colour for? Let's say Living and Dead. Who would be your favourites?
Probably Stokoy, Chris Stokoy, who does Orkstein. He's done some Godzilla stuff. Is it Chris? I'm pretty sure it's Chris.
James.
James. Yeah. So that's it. James Stokoy, yeah.
Because he just did the Alien series. Alien, is it Orbit?
James Stokoe.
That's it.
I never know how to pronounce that name. So.
That's all of us on this show.
Yeah.
Did Dan get you that for your birthday, V?
Yeah. The Aliens Dead Orbit. Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. That's a cool looking book, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, any work by him is amazing stuff, and I constantly always think back to the work he did just for himself that was do you remember Spider-Nam? I've brought it up in the show a couple of times.
Yeah, I've never read it. I remember you talking about it.
Was only like a couple of pages he did for himself, and it was just a Spider-Man character in Vietnam, and it was just
I do remember now. I have seen it. It's good stuff. Anyone else? Simon, who else?
Matias Vergara, who did Coda. Coda's one of my favorite comics of this year. Gun of a comic. But his artwork is quite distinct, and it has a great energy to it. I just think it would be great fun to color. And then the final one would have to be Daniel Warren Johnson, I think. So all modern ones for me. If I had a chance to go back and color some other the classics would be fun.
I notice those artists you picked, though, they're very much detail orientated. You look at the pages and it's like, oh my god, sometimes it just feels like ink has just washed onto the page and it's created all of these details that you notice.
Nothing completely joins up either, does it? It's not like Byrne, where every single line joins the right next line. They're much more of a sort of action, there's a real burst of energy on the page, and it doesn't have to, I'm not saying perfect, it doesn't have to be sort of completely anatomically perfect. It just has to have that energy to it,
So as a colourist then, Simon, you're not afraid of a page that's absolutely filled with detail?
Probably my worst enemy that way, but I do enjoy it. And I have got a really bad habit of being, I mean, it's the problem is when you can zoom in on digital artwork to, 1000% or whatever and color a single pixel, you can end up getting caught up in doing, this awesome little section of coloring. And then when you actually see the printed comic, you can't really see what you've done.
Yeah, because you do kind of have to pick and choose, don't you? Especially like, Horizons and things, like you're saying there. You may see a page that the black and white artwork is actually filled with colour and like different creatures or different landscapes, but that doesn't mean that it all has to be coloured supremely detailed. Do you know what I mean? If there's a crowd scene, you don't need to colour everyone specifically, do their eye colours and everything, do you? You could just do like a blank, just if they're just a crowd sometimes is, even though it's there to be seen in a comic,
you don't have to colour each pocket, do you? Do you know what I mean?
And sometimes putting just them in a singular kind of silhouette-ish kind of hue is a way to make the important elements stand out, but still show that there's a crowd there.
And I guess think that's when you notice it as well, isn't it? You look at the black and white art and you think, oh my god, where does the colorist start with this? But then when you see the page, and like you say there, you've got the crowd in one color, and then the foreground just pops, then you immediately see the power that color has when it, to differentiate a black and white page from a color page.
Yeah, I mean, it's a visual shortcut comic, isn't it, in many ways?
Yeah.
And you don't need that sometimes. I mean, to be fair, I think, for example, Darwin Cook, I prefer Darwin Cook's work with like minimal colors, like the Parker stuff, which has got like the two color thing going on. I actually prefer it that way, because I just think sometimes less is more, isn't it? And the same goes for those crowd scenes. The same goes for a lot of things, really.
Yeah, and I think those artists that I mentioned there, they're all got a certain looseness to their artwork as well, which gives you a bit of flexibility in the colors to play around in my mind. Whereas if it's something that's super detailed, but more your kind of, I guess, your Jim Lee or your McFarlane kind of Spawn kind of really detailed one, then you've kind of got to get that detail in, but be more strict about the form and colors. So I guess I could probably have more fun on those than I would if I was doing a really intricate.
When you're worrying just staying in the line, as opposed to, you know, you don't have to worry so much with what's that Murder Hawk? What's that fucking?
Daniel Warren Johnson.
That sort of stuff. It's not as important as like filling in every, you know, bit on a costume with a Perez page or something. You know, it's different, isn't it? It's different kinds of work. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, and I guess if you do break out of the lines in those, it can emphasize something, but also look like it's meant to happen. Whereas if you break out of the lines in a strict kind of Marvel comic and do something a bit crazy there, then it might not go down quite as well, or it might not be as appropriate.
Have you found so far, obviously not naming any names, that you've the creators have used the colouring to fill a few of the shortfalls in the artwork? It's certainly something I've come through as a writer and a sort of editor. I've noticed that sometimes colouring can make up the shortfall in sometimes storytelling, you know?
Yeah, I think so. And I think sometimes it's also a matter of when you put the colours into some of the artwork that you don't think is as good, it actually shows that there is a quality to the artwork that you weren't really seeing. I don't know if it's so much
interesting. Yeah, a matter of,
sometimes it is probably polishing a turd, but but also other times it's actually when you put the colours in there, it gives a definition that maybe the artist had in their mind knowing that it's going to be coloured anyway. So I think, you know, but there is definitely occasions where I've been given artwork that maybe I haven't thought is as good as other artwork I've been given. But you have to work around that, and that's where, you know, as a colorist, you can actually enhance that and actually turn it into a really good final.
That's what they get on board for. If they didn't want it colored, you know.
I guess another detail that you have to think about, which shows the importance of a script, is much like an artist, you don't want to be working for ages on these little background details if there's going to be a huge speech bubble over the top of it.
Exactly.
I guess you have to bear that in mind with the colours as well, don't you?
And it's something that generally you would hope the speech bubbles go on sections where there isn't a great amount of detail. But that's where having a script helps as well. Because if you see that there's a panel that's got, you know, 300 words in it, you know that the speech bubble is going to take up quite a bit of space on that. Whereas other ones where there's less, the word balloon will be smaller, and you know there's not cover up as much. But generally, that stuff would generally land in areas that aren't as detailed. Or if, I mean, there have definitely been times when I've coloured something and then got the final comic and gone, oh, why did I bother doing that?
Yeah. I was thinking, if you're colouring like a beautiful sunset above the heads of a pair of people talking, you might come away thinking, that is amazing. Look what I've done to that sunset. But you know that's where the word balloons are going to go. You know, because the alternative is they'll go on the heads of the other people, you know, sort of. Mm. Yeah. It's a funny art form like that.
The flip side of that is that when you put it in your portfolio, you leave the letters off and it still looks good in your portfolio. You're not really losing out that much if, you know, you think of it as a positive way to show your skills.
Yeah, and it's an art form, and it's an art, you know, it's artistic, isn't it? So that's what you're doing, isn't it, I suppose?
Yeah.
Do you only colour digitally, do you, Simon, or is it, do you ever have a go at other ways?
It's very much when I'm doing production work digitally is generally, I might do some stuff where I lay down some watercolors or something and scan that in.
I've done
that before on more so on kind of pinups and stuff like that and covers. I've done a cover for a comic where I actually did the base colors in watercolor, actual proper watercolors, and then scanned that, brought it into the computer, and then also did some digital stuff over the top of that. And it's something that I'd love to do more of, but it's just the time involved.
Yeah, there's something about watching. We often share videos of Enrico Marini color painting his comics, and there's something about watching someone. It's just a beautiful thing, isn't it? You know, it really is.
It's so good.
It's so good. It's just the lack of hesitation or anything on these vids. He's just attacking it relentlessly.
I do wonder though if it's like skateboarding videos that you don't see all the hundreds of stacks that they've had before they get this.
It's an uninterrupted stream of excellence.
Be like Dan.
Yeah.
But I mean, that guy's got to have done something and gone, ah, oh, shit, I'm not going to use that. And then he's not going to put that on his Instagram either.
And once again, I'd like to know where his dustbin is, because I nicked that straight away. I would steal everything in his dustbin. Yeah.
Not to take anything away from him, because he's just obscenely good, and in such an inspirational way that's what I'd love to be able to do, you know? If I have more time to play on comics, I would love to do something completely, you know, the old analog style, traditional style. And, you know, I've got a couple of personal projects on the go which may have scope for that.
Nice.
Oh, nice.
Are there any colorists you, as you were coming up in the business, you looked up to and sought advice from even?
Yeah, when I was looking at the stuff to do for Farhan, I got the Beautiful Canvas comics that Ryan K. Lindsay had written.
Yes.
And the colours by Trina Farrell. Also known by Tree, by a lot of people, though as Tree. And she's done some amazing work on Deep Roots, which she did kind of almost like it was almost like a Matisse style colouring on that, which I had the the privilege to do some assisting work on that with her. But she, early on, I reached out to show her the samples that I'd done for Farhan before I sent them through to Farhan. And I said, I love your artwork. Would you mind having a look and let me know? Not really expecting to get anything back.
Yeah.
But she came back with heaps of advice, some little tweaks on that you know, may have got me the job in the end. And she was like, I'm happy to give you advice as needed. So back then she wasn't quite as busy as she is now. She's really taken off since then, and she's done a lot of stuff for Marvel. And I think she may have done some stuff for DC as well. But she's been really excellent, really supportive, and she's like that with anyone. She's just
an absolute
gem of a person. She's always saying to anyone, just if you're new colorist, you know, hit me up and I'll help you out. Another one is Marissa Louise, who's done colors on Hex Wives and Grumble, among other things.
Okay. Yeah.
And she's set up a Discord for pro colorists, which is basically an online, safe online forum for us to chat kind of business stuff and personal stuff, and really set up a great community for the colorists. So she's been very helpful as well with advice, and she's great because she's very forthcoming with advice, but doesn't pull punches, but not in a horrible way, in a really good way.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which you need to have some brutal, you know, a brutal advice, if that's the best way to put it. Because some people will be, they're too nice, and not saying that Marissa isn't nice. She's wonderful, but she knows that if she's going to be like that, you're not actually learning. Whereas if she actually tells you what she thinks, then you learn from that.
It's like everywhere, every artistic discipline has this, where they'll show a film or so, you know, a painting or something, and everyone will go, "Darling, it's so marvelous," and then behind your back they'll be going, "What an utter load of shit." And I think comics is surviving. It's coming out of that now. No, everything is brilliant, and everyone is prepared to sort of give sensible advice. I think we're getting there slowly, and it's good to hear that. It really is, man.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, and I think the colorist community is really tight and really, really, I guess, close knit and helpful. Like they just always, there's no sense of if I help someone else out, they're going to get one up on me. It's more about just increasing the quality of the work, the awareness of what colorists do, and an appreciation that also, you know, that we're worth what we ask in terms of fees. You know, I guess if there's anyone out there who's looking to start coloring, probably the easiest first touch point to access on YouTube would be Kurt Michael Russell.
Yes. He's been on
the show.
Yeah, good lad. Really good.
He has a treasure trove of videos there for people first starting out. And also Nick Filardi does a Twitch channel and also has stuff on YouTube. Stuff is really great. He quite often will be colouring something and talking through the process as he goes. He's an amazing colourist. His work on The Realm I really love. He's done a billion good things. He's on Nightwing at the moment as well.
It really does seem that Image and Boom and Dark Horse are the places where colour really is popping at the moment.
Yeah,
I'm almost finding Marvel and DC are playing a little safe with some of their colouring. There's some real chances. You look at stuff like Trees or stuff like that. They're really taking chances with what's going on in the page.
I think though the those colorists that are working for those companies are getting work with Marvel and DC and everything now. A bit of a shift. I think, Tamara Bonvillain, she has done some amazing work for those companies and also now Trees working for them as well, Trina.
They both came out of like Boom and Image, didn't they, I think? Am I right in saying both of them? Tamara was on Alters with Aftershock and stuff like that, wasn't she?
Yeah, and I think she's doing stuff like Doom Patrol and Captain Marvel and stuff now as well.
Yeah.
They're having them, come in from the independents where they've done some kind of quite cutting edge and amazing stuff. They're starting to introduce, and I think editors are getting more and more aware that they don't have that readers aren't just going to be like, oh, that's a red background. Where'd that red light come from? They realize that that's. The psychology and emotion attached to colours. You can push the boundaries a little bit more. So I think to the credit of some of the big two and some of the other bigger publishers, they are starting to let people play a bit more. I think.
Yeah. You got to look at Marvel. It is a place where you had Sienkiewicz and you had Lynn Varley doing the Daredevil book, and there's historically been some really interesting stuff. Even the Dreadstar stuff. The stuff in Epic magazine. There's been some really interesting colour work going on in Marvel. Sometimes they just settle for a bit and then they need another kick, don't they? I think a lot of these big companies.
Well, I think as well, you've got such a big history and a big fan base for those books that it is going to be a bit harder to do something completely out there than a smaller publisher. And there's definitely times that it might not be appropriate on those books because, it might not work, or you might end up getting a whole bunch of people who are readers who are going, I don't get it, I don't like it. But I think you got to give the readers a lot of credit. People seem to focus on the negativity of some of the social media and associated.
Yeah, life's too short for all that.
Speaking of the big companies and big breaks, I've got this image that Simon's at his house. He's sitting there. You've got a dog, haven't you, Simon? I know it's in your pictures. Yep. He's sitting there talking to your dog, and the phone rings, and it's Charles Band.
He says, the direction I was going to ask. Go on.
He says, we're going to do a comic about Dolman. The puppet master's going to be in it. You name it's going to be in it. Will you colour it? And I remember you getting the job and me actually emailing you saying how excited I was that you would turn it, and I knew you. How did that come about, that one, man?
those books were amazing to colour. They're just so much fun.
Did you know the Full Moon universe before you got stuck in?
I remember I watched the Puppet Master movies. I think they were the only ones of the series that I actually watched because they've got so many.
What, you've never watched Ginger Dead Man? What's wrong with you? Evil Bong.
Evil Bong, I want to watch. I think there's about 100 Evil Bong movies.
Yeah.
The problem is my Evil Bong days have long gone, so I probably
and
just...
And me, my friend. Yeah. I'm not more like that sort of grizzled bloke in Trancers, Jack Death, whatever his name is. I've just got that look on my face all the time now. Yeah.
They were great, and they're really good to work with. Unfortunately, I had to pass in on another job that they offered me, which was kind of an ongoing stuff just because a few reasons. I was busy and some other stuff, but nothing related to them.
It's good to be busy though, man. It's good to be busy.
And you know, it's also a matter of you can only work accept certain levels of pay at certain amounts of time, and I just couldn't afford to do it.
Right.
I mean, I don't want to get into the big kind of pay.
No, of course, man.
Yeah. I think it moreover speaks volumes about the work that you did on it that people come back to ask you for more work, which is brilliant in itself, isn't it? Really.
Yeah, and it's just a matter of you know, I've got to feed my kids and my dog. Sometimes, you know, there's projects that you would love to work on, but the budget just doesn't really work.
I get you. You know, of course.
Maybe in the future. They said if their budgets increase, they'll definitely think of me. But they're a small publisher, and I get it. You know, they wouldn't be making a great deal off their comics at this stage. So
I mean, they'll probably trade that, and you know, that sort of thing. I bought the issues. I'll probably buy the trade as well. You know, it's. I think that sort of thing, and their Puppet Master book was great as well. That was a really good series, you know. I think they got possibilities. They really have, you know. I really enjoy what they do.
And they've got the history to show that they stick by their guns as well. So I think, you know, I don't think they're going to just give it a you know, a quick try and give up. They're going to be definitely pushing that for a while, I think.
So this is Action Lab we're talking about here, isn't it? Just for people that know, is that right? Yeah.
Well, it's actually goes under Full Moon Comics now. I think it may be associated with Action Lab, or it may be just a subsidiary. I don't know, but it definitely they go under Full Moon Comics, and that's with an X, COMIX.
I know Action Lab have got the infamously titled Kingdom Bum.
Oh, nice.
That's not apropos to anything. I just thought I'd say it.
And that's one way to put a period on this conversation, isn't it, Tony? Bloody hell.
No, but I highly recommend anyone, well, read anything Simon does, but that's the Full Moon stuff is nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We got sent through a whole Dropbox link of work. It was great. Love going through that.
Yeah, really good stuff, man. Yeah, thanks for that.
Yeah. So, and thank you very much for talking about process. It was exactly what we wanted.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So from the really jaws of defeat, we have snatched victory. Thanks to Simon. And are you going to stick with us for the next 25 minutes or so?
Yeah, no, that's cool. My girls might be up for another hour or so.
Splendid.
Nice one, sir.
And I've got plenty of show notes to put in this week. So of all those great colorists and stuff, because like Simon says, you know, the work that colorists do sometimes goes unheralded, and they can save a book. So
they really can.
So we're getting, it's quite, I'm liking these. One of the things I'm liking about these process shows is we've done the writing and we've done the artwork. You could argue, you know, that's the lead guitarist and the singer of a band, but now we're getting to like the bits that more people need to know about. You know, without the rhythm section, the band doesn't play, does it? So the colouring, lettering, and all of those things afterwards. I've been looking forward to talking about these sort of bits because they are sometimes the moments that do get overlooked with comics. So hopefully, especially all you wannabe colourists out there, or maybe you're colouring your own work, I've got plenty of tips about stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
There.
Yeah.
That was brilliant. 3 for 3. We're doing all right, aren't we?
Yeah, that was good. That was really good.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed that.
Cheers, Simon.
Yes. But do we have any shout outs? Should we get to the shout out section?
Okay, I've only got the one. Kickstarter, The Cosplayer That Doomed the Earth, issues 1 and 2, by the mighty Dan Harris. I've read both these, and I still backed it because I'd like a physical copy of the comics. But if you go to Kickstarter, it's basically about a geezer dresses up. Is convinced to dress up in a cosplay, gets mistaken for the actual character by the space sort of pirates. He gets kidnapped. It's good fun, and it's a friendly little poke in the eye. A few overly sort of cheerful Deadpool cosplayers. Let's just say that. If you go back I reviewed this about 2 months ago, I reckon.
Yeah.
On here, recommended it. It's good fun. It could do with a bit of help. He's doing well, but still 24 more days to go to get behind that one. That's my one.
I've backed that one myself.
Oh, good man. Yeah.
Nice. Excellent. Dan, do you have any shout-outs?
We mentioned during the show K. Michael Russell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you go to comiccolor.com, he actually runs a comic colouring course.
nice. So,
yes, he does. He talked about that on the show, didn't he?
Yeah. Well worth doing. It's a shame we can't go by the name Kurt Russell, but...
there can be only one. They're like Highlanders. Yeah.
They probably track him down, the other one.
Yeah.
He's in the new Tarantino movie, and he ain't got a moustache. I was quite shocked to see.
Mm, okay.
He doesn't always have a moustache, Tony.
I like him with a moustache, though, don't you?
Yeah.
Or a nice pair of mutton chops.
He does all right in Big Trouble. Just got a bit of...
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I like it when he's got that lipstick on. That's my favourite bit.
Or Tango. Or Tango and Cash. don't butcher with the shade.
It's strange that you two got that knowledge on hand immediately where Kurt Russell has appeared with lipstick on.
Well, of course they do.
Yeah.
It's like that old bloke who sat next to me in the cafe earlier looking at the VHS porn magazines. Porn films. He's the one who told me.
Yeah,
he's fond of all knowledge.
Bet he did. I just got a minor shout out that actually came about because of the show. Simon was talking about Coda, Volume 1, so I thought, oh, this sounds quite good. Looked it on Comixology, and you can get a 125-page graphic novel for £2.49. So I bought it.
Right, I'm all over that. I'm going straight to that myself.
You get 55% off at the moment, so there you go.
That comic is amazing.
It looks beautiful. Just looking at the
nice one.
The covers are absolutely stunning. So, yeah, thank you for that. I'm looking forward to getting into that. Right, speaking of getting into stuff, hang on, that's probably not the best way to start.
Yeah, you were talking about miners a minute ago. I don't know what's going on with you.
Pardon?
You said just a miner shout-out. I wonder what's coming.
No, I wasn't going to shout out to any miners. But, you know, shout out to any coal miners.
Why have you got a clean knob? I went home for lunch. What?
Tony,
we're quite sex heavy, haven't we?
I tell you what, it sort of goes horribly wrong, and then we get super serious talking about a process, and then we stop. The moment we stop, it just goes off a cliff again.
Giving people what they want.
Yeah, exactly.
Mining jokes,
knowledge and filth. That's what.
Can I give another shout out?
Go on.
I met with Jason Gunn for dinner this week, and we had a proper chuckle. Yeah, it's good to see him.
Nice.
We could talk about his announcement, can't we? Because it's been officially announced.
The Medieval.
Yeah. Back in the
medieval
day.
Comic.
Yeah, Jay was part of the team that worked on the game Medieval.
He was one of the creators, wasn't he?
One of the creators. Yeah. PlayStation. So he's been involved with creating a comic to do the re-release of the game where they've jazzed it all up.
Mm. Yeah.
So I can remember playing
it
back in the day.
I haven't actually read the announcement, although I've seen him posted it, so I don't know what I can say. I'm in a bit careful now because I watched him create some of it. I'm not sure if I meant to say everything, but the bit I did see looked amazing. Obviously, yeah. Awesome. He's a great artist, Jason. He does a bit of detail in his art as well.
Yeah,
there's no lack of detail.
I'm looking at a print of his in front of me right this second.
Ah, I've got those. They're great, aren't they?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Brilliant. Nice one.
So from shout outs to amazing deals, artists, and more. What about some good comics and stuff for people to check out this week? Who wants to go first? Tony.
Should we let the guests go first?
Oh, yeah, let's let the guests go first. Simon, what would you like to recommend to our lovely listeners?
Okay, I didn't have a great deal of time to prepare for this, but
you're also still waking up.
Yeah.
You
have been in the shower because I read it out.
Well, it's almost 6 a.m., so that's all right. No, I wanted to. recommend Hap Haven.
Oh, okay.
Hap Haven.
So Hap Haven. It's out on Raw, and it's a comic that's been written by Norm Harper and illustrated by Louis Joyce. Louis is an Aussie illustrator. And he's worked on a bunch of comics, and I kind of run into him at the comic cons over here, and he's a top bloke. But it's a really kind of a lovely kind of all ages comic about a girl who comes from a very superstitious family. Her father's super superstitious and she's superstitious. Her mother's kind of along for the ride. She's not so superstitious, but it's just kind of her husband is that way. And then a series of things happen where her father is taken away from her for a reason. I'm not going to spoil many of the plot points because it's just a great story to go in kind of with not too much knowledge about. And then she breaks the superstition herself, and there's a repercussion for her mother, which sends her on a journey to try and find a rabbit's foot to avoid, to I guess, get rid of this jinx that's happened to her mother. And to do that, she has to go to a place called Haphaven, which is kind of like a fantasy world where all of the superstitions are kind of embodied by actual beings and creatures in that world. And she has to journey through that world and try and get the rabbit's foot, which is still attached to a rabbit. So, it's just a great fun journey through there. The artwork is just—it's just so good. It fits the story perfectly, and he's done the coloring as well as the artwork, and it's just it's got a great kind of fairy tale esque kind of style, but it's got a good edge to it as well, and lots of comedy.
Just looking at it now, it looks lovely. That's another really nice one.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, no, and it's just probably a book that not many people have heard of that I think both, you know, the writer and the artist deserve attention, because it's really well written and the art is just superb. Nice. And obviously support my Aussie, fellow Aussie creators as well. So that'll be my first one. It's I'm not sure how available it is in terms of the actual paperback, I don't even know if it's on
it's on Comixology, and it's 33% off at the moment for 153 pages. So
okay,
get on it.
And the book itself is probably about A5 size, so it's not huge in terms of size. So getting it digitally, you probably actually see, you'd be able to zoom in and see more of the detail in the artwork. But said, the book itself, the amount of detail he fits in there is great, and even if it's a slightly smaller size book.
Awesome.
Nice.
That sounds really good. Yeah, do you have any others, or is that...
You don't have to have any others.
I've only got a quick one this week.
I wanted to mention that's not a really small press one, but it's a fun one, is Delicious in Dungeon, which is a manga comic by Ryoko Kui. And it's basically about adventurers that are going through dungeons to try and get ingredients to make recipes. And that sounds a bit odd.
That sounds great.
That's often a theme in some manga, isn't it? There's almost a genre in its own, cooking adventure. You know, isn't it?
Yeah, this is super addictive. So it's one of those ones that you start reading going, oh, this is kind of quirky. And then by the time you finish the first one, you're like, oh, I really want to see where this goes. But they'll do something like they'll kill a huge scorpion or a basilisk or something. And then they go through a whole series of how they use that in a recipe and actually give you the recipe. it's just good fun. Yeah, both of them are very much all-age books. I think maybe Delicious in Dungeon has some slightly more advanced themes a little bit later on, but I think it's kind of themes that you older people will get, younger kids may miss a bit, but it's not like they're going to read it and get, you know, turned into homicidal maniacs or anything like that. but no, that's just it's a good fun. That's one that no colour in it. And I mean, I still love my manga. I mean, one of my early comics or early loves that I didn't mention was Akira, and that was a big catalyst for me to get into manga, and you know, it's a great, and obviously we've got comics that you've spoken about, like Gyo and all the ones, the horror side of things I love as well.
Jinji Ito, Shusumaki,
Delicious in Dungeon is definitely worth having a look at for a laugh, and just upcarded fun. I mean, here we've got a man-eating plant tart ingredients, and it serves 3 to 4 people. And it's stuff like you need leftover scorpion broth, 200 mL, slime gelatin. It's just silly stuff, but it's really good fun.
I love that.
Yeah, that sounds interesting. Yeah, I might give myself on that.
Cool.
Oh, amazing.
Nice one. Do you want to go, V, if you've got a little short one?
Yeah, I got a short one. I'll just let him have it. So, go on, let him have it.
Long and thin may go in. Short and thick does the trick.
Here we go. But my recommendation this week is just a little 17-page comic on Comixology called Wolf Moon. This is written by David Ocampo, art by Chris Anderson. They've done a couple of sort of short, like horror shorts. There's there was Devil Skin and Witch Heart, which is also available. But this one is, and they're very striking. The covers themselves, actually, the cover of Wolfman was one that I posted up on the weekly covers of the week sort of thing. It's like a white cover with a very stark black and yellow sort of design with a medieval knight on it. This is a story of basically two knights meeting on a battlefield. Like, there's this knight who's tasked from a witch to take down another sort of mighty warrior. So he takes him on the battlefield. There's a big battle. And then supernatural. I don't want to spoil it because this is a classic sort of one-shot horror in the Tales from the Crypt kind of way.
Nice.
If Tales from the Crypt did a medieval story, it's that kind of thing. I would have read the synopsis, but I think the synopsis drops in a couple of words, which may give away a bit too much anyway. So, but I'll post up a couple. The artwork's really nice as well. It's black, white, and yellow. This is something that they've put throughout all their books. It's black and white artwork with splashes of whatever that book is. Like Devil Skin had red and Witch Heart had green. So, you know, I quite like that from a sort of design perspective. It works really nicely. It's not overly done. When I say black, white and yellow, most of it is black and white. But then like just a little bit of colouring or like a moon shining in the background will just be yellow. You know, just these little pops which sort of push it above. It's 17 pages. It's only 69p on Comixology. You know, one and done, just a good laugh. And the artwork's lovely as well, so definitely check them out. And another very, very minor recommendation, which is going to be a TV show. Will you stop thinking about... Just stop it. Just get it out of your system.
Sorry.
You're an absolute beast.
I don't
think
he's ever going to be out of his system.
No, he'll never be out of his system. Yeah. But another recommendation, which is a TV show, and I'm not sure if we don't normally talk about TV, but I ended up watching the final series of Into the Badlands this weekend, and it's done now. There's going to be no more because AMC cancelled it. But it's just one of the best action series. There was.
I've been watching loads of old school kung fu movies, and that keeps getting recommended to me as something
you have to watch. It. It's like someone, you know, it's like a graphic novel. You know, it's not like it's almost like someone wanted to make a graphic novel and then they just made a TV show instead. You know, normally we hear about people making wanting to make comics that want to be a TV show, but this actually just feels like people that would make a fantastic graphic novel of this. Yeah. And plus, it's just badass martial arts by people who actually know what they're doing. And actually, sort of, you see the fights rather than lots of quick cuts, which we see in the big movies.
Yeah.
You can. Yeah. And lots of wire work and over the top.
Okay. Matches. I'd like to point out that I had a discussion with Lisa Mills this week where she doubted that Enter the Dragon was the greatest movie ever made.
It's fantastic. It's brilliant.
Yeah, something wrong with her there, isn't there?
Oh, well, you know, what can you say? That's a deep cut. That's
if
deep
I was going to make a change in Enter the Dragon, bear with me, Tony.
Yeah.
Rather than having John Saxon in the final bit with Lee fighting, I would have had the guy that played Black Belt Jones, whose name escapes me.
Yeah.
Jim
Kelly.
Jim Kelly, yeah.
He was so better physically to kind of do it. But
I watched Black Belt Jones 2, which has also got another weird name. It's The Search of Kung Fu Gold or something like that. And it is bloody terrible.
Yeah. And if Tony Esmond says that, Jesus.
Yeah.
There's one kick. If you Google it on YouTube, do Black Belt Jones and like kick or something, and there's a sequence where he kicks his stuntman, and it's like he almost like doubles him in half and he goes flying over the bonnet. And it's like there's no special effects or wires there.
Yeah,
he literally kicked the man.
Is that the start when he's fighting the cops, or is that the one in... Because he does a really good fight in like...
Yeah, he's fighting in the street with some coppers.
That's the one, yeah.
And he boots his geezer in fucking slow-mo, and it's like, Jesus.
Yeah.
Nice, I've got a YouTube
put that in the show notes.
Yeah, we'll put that in there.
I occasionally shout O'Hara out at work, but they don't really understand it in the no-brow offices, so they don't stop at me.
Well, they will after...
get back to work.
They will after this week. Okay, who wants to go next? Dan, do you want to go next?
Yeah, sure. I've recommended a book that Tony got me. Oh. Sam Zabel and the Magic Pen.
Oh, yes. Nice. I've started reading this. I'm enjoying this.
I'll read you the blurb. It's cartoonist Sam Zabel hasn't drawn a comic in years. Stuck in a nightmare of creative block and despair, Sam spends his days writing superhero stories for a large American comics publisher and staring at a blank piece of paper, unable to draw a single line. Then one day he finds a mysterious old comic book set on Mars and is suddenly thrown headlong into a wild, fantastic journey through centuries of comics, stories, and imaginary worlds. Accompanied by a young webcomic creator called Alice and an enigmatic schoolgirl with rocket boots and a big bag full of comics, Sam goes in search of the magic pen, encountering sex-crazed aliens, medieval monks, pirates, pixies, and of course, cartoonists. Funny, erotic, thoughtful, Sam's Able in the Magic Pen explores the pleasures, dangers, and moral consequences of fantasy. It's not right, not wrong about the sex and eroticism.
Yeah, it gets a bit lively, doesn't it? Yeah, yeah. I seem to remember. Yeah, because I read this as a webcomic originally. It was a webcomic for a while, and it's sort of a collected one.
The way I could sort of describe this is using film language. It's like the inception of comics, but on crack. The full thrall is gone through so many times.
Yeah,
it's just like, wow, okay, so he's like in a comic book, and then they pull in characters from other comic books to interact with each other. It's very much a comic about making comics. It's an interesting one.
Okay,
and sort of about kind of fantasies, and I've got to admit, I wasn't too at the end. It moralizes a little, which I'm kind of like, oh, this is a bit clunky.
But, I mean, I've only read the very beginning of it, and the very beginning, it feels, and this is before it gets into the crazy nature, it's a good 20-odd pages, and it feels very, almost like an autobiographical comic of like someone that's feeling very uninspired, isn't it? And just
there's a little bit of the Scott McCloud about it as I feel that.
I sent a message, and it feels like I'm reading the Twitter stream of some of the people I follow on the comic creators I follow. They're sort of moaning about how they can't work and how they don't feel... Yeah, they're in the mood and all that business.
That made-up disease called con crud that everyone seems to suffer from. Yeah,
but it's interesting. I mean, like as it goes on, it talks about sort of fantasies and putting them in comics and how an author's fantasies can have like wider consequences. I kind of get what they're getting at, but this feels a bit heavy-handed in the end. But,
okay,
I couldn't tell you where the story was going at any point. It's great.
Yeah.
It's just like a roller coaster ride.
It's Dylan Horrocks, is that right?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, yeah. He's great. He's is he a New Zealander? I'm going to say, Simon. Is that right? Do you know? I know it's about 1,000 miles from you, but it's the nearest country to you. That's all I've been thinking.
He might be a New Zealander that we claim as Australian. I don't know.
I've read that in Comixology. That was a good read. Cheers, Tony.
It's good stuff, isn't it? My pleasure, man. Yeah.
Nice.
Shall I do mine?
Yeah, go for it.
So,
yes.
I don't know about you. Funny enough, we were talking about Marini earlier, and he turned my head first with Desert Star and secondly with the book called The Eagles of Rome, which I think you've read, Dan, haven't you? You've read some of it.
Brilliant. Love it.
It's an amazing book. And you begin to realise that a lot of European comics love that period of history. I've torn through a few of them. There's Gloria Victus from Fernandez and Guerro. There's Marina from Jean Dufaux and Philippe Delaby. And then there's also Ira Day, which is from Vincent Brugeas. And there's a few that sort of cover that sort of almost period of history. And it seems to be like the old West is for, you know, like we love Westerns, don't we? Or war stories. It seems to be that they go back to a lot in bande dessinée. And so I was searching through Europe comics, as there are pals, and thinking, oh, what can I read? I fancy something with a bit of teeth to it, you know. And I came across a book called Expedition. I read the first volume, which is called The Nubian Lion. It's written by Richard Marizano, and it's art by Marcello Frusin. And it's $3.99, and it's 58 pages. And it is an absolute fucking revelation. The Europeans do this so well. Do you know what I mean? It's just so beautiful. And it's a book about... it's like The Dirty Dozen go on a mission. It's like one of those sort of guys on a mission kind of books. But instead of sort of machine guns and it being, you know, behind enemy lines in France or something, it's in the deserts of Africa, and they're all mostly sort of Roman centurions and soldiers and stuff like that. The story is Marcus Livius is on the orders of Caius Bracchus, ventures off in search of an undiscovered civilization somewhere in Africa. Where they think there's going to be like this big mass of riches, and they decide to go AWOL. So he gathers a team of like proper nutty hard bastards, and they go, even forces them to fight each other as a sort of initiation ceremony, and they don't know what's going on. And there's a Greek guy and there's a couple of Romans. And then he takes them, they all go AWOL from their regiments, and they go off to seek their fortunes. But in the real world, you don't go off and seek your fortunes and it takes you a week and you come back, nobody notices you've gone. This takes fucking years, you know. Mm. They begin to search Africa, and it turns into, you know, a couple of them die. They scrabble through the sort of deserts and sand dunes, fighting each other as well as fighting sort of hostile creatures and the humans from other sort of local armies and desert guys and stuff like that. And it's absolutely full of like tension, and you just don't know who's going to die in it. You don't know who's going to be the hero. You don't know what's going on. I'm going to say that the art really reminded me of Richard Corben, if anyone knows his stuff.
Oh my word.
It's that real nasty, brutal, but beautiful. Do you know what I mean? There's a guy called Jean-Claude Gall who did Armies out of Humanoids. And he also did that Dios Amante, that I think is another Humanoids book. And I looked at the preview pages on Comixology, and that's what turned my eye to this book, because it's really strong art, you know, really dark, nasty, horrible, horrific, but also sort of heroic fiction. And it really, really rattles along. He doesn't, as is the case with all European books, they never in any way cut corners on the art. And every page is just fully realised, from the bricks behind the characters to the sky above them to eagles soaring and huge castles and rivers and, you know, this sort of thing. There's some absolutely astounding sequences in it. One of the ones I really love, and this shows the effects that, again, we're talking about colours can have, is where they're in I think it's about sort of 20 pages into it, and they're sort of trekking across the desert, and a couple of them have died, and they've just been in a sort of battle with the sort of local warlord, and they're desperate to sort of get away, and they're presented with this sandstorm, which is done so well, this sort of swirling browns of this sandstorm going towards them, that it rather than just being sand in the air, this is like a wall coming at them, you know. And the art in it is just incredible. It's just like amazing. So they leg it off into this sort of towering Egyptian structure, which is based on the Abu Simbel, if anyone knows that. It's like the Valley of the Kings kind of thing going on. And they hide in there, and out of the darkness comes these sort of starving, ravenous, rabid hyenas who they have to fight off, and it's just amazing. I mean, I say this over and over again, but if this was a Dark Horse book or an Image book, this would be winning every award out there, and people would be losing their fucking wee over it. Do you know what I mean? It's like absolutely brilliant. But it's also strange. It's also got an edge to it. It's also got a danger and a brutality and a, you know, sort of life is short with these guys. You never know what's going to happen. It's the first of three. So there's three currently. I haven't read the next two, although I've downloaded them onto my iPad ready to be read. There's the first of three, and I suspect there's probably more, and it's part of a series. Frusin hasn't done enough out there that's been translated. You can't really find much of his stuff. He's done some weird war tales over at DC, and a few other things. Marizano, you may know him probably best from, which was an early Cinebook release, which was The Chimpanzee Complex. If anyone's seen that sort of space mystery thing. Or he also wrote, I think, did you review it a few weeks ago, D, Alcyon?
He
wrote that as well. Really good stuff. I mean, unfortunately, I know the sort of game plan of Europe Comics is they put it out there, and if people want to print it as a sort of paper published kind of thing, they can do, and they can buy the rights from Europe Comics, and this really does need to be translated. It really does. But if it doesn't get put into English soon, get yourself a digital copy, and then if you love the art enough, which is what I'm going to do, get yourself a copy from Dargaud. So Dargaud, Dargaud.com, publish it in France, in the French language, or you can go to www.europecomics.com and find a copy on their website, or I just got mine off Comixology. Yeah. You keep your eye out. I'm sure it'd be in a sale at some point, but $3.99 for 58 pages that are just like drop dead gorgeous ain't bad.
Yeah, always keep an eye out for what Europe Comics release, because their releases are thought out and the range is diverse. So, you know, even though, I mean, we've shouted about books on this show many times, but even if that isn't your flavour, there'll be something for you, and we definitely recommend checking it out.
It's just the well that I just keep going back to.
Yeah.
You know, I thought, what am I going to review this week? And I thought, I haven't looked at what Europe Comics got on the go at the moment, and I found this, and I just fell in love with it. Absolutely. Yeah. So good.
Nice.
There you go. And hopefully you lovely people will fall in love with these books that we've recommended. I've certainly got some on my shopping list now, so brilliant.
Yeah, me too.
So, and thank you very much for joining us, Simon.
Yeah, you mate. You're still there, dude.
I was dozing off a bit, but I'm still there.
Right, that's what all the listeners say.
Everyone's dozing off.
Complete apologies. Once you said to me, I'm not really good with time zones on our chat yesterday, and I said, don't worry, I'll sort it out. I'll look it out on my phone, and then I got it wrong. So yeah. My apologies again. Yeah. Completely down to me. Well, but it's been great. It's been long waiting, mate, having you on, because I know we've been friends for a few years now. It's been it's good stuff.
Yeah
great.
No, I appreciate it. It's been good fun. So thanks for having me on.
And trust me, if you need a colorist, this is the guy to go to.
Yes.
Great
yes,
stuff.
Indeed.
Really good.
I mean, just look at all the knowledge he partaked in this episode. Yeah. So, yes. And we hope you all enjoyed it and got some hints and tips and things like that. If you want to know anything else or if you've got any questions, then you can get in touch with us by email, awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Well, you can follow us on Twitter @theawesomepod. Our next show we're recording in a couple of days. So in terms of questions, just after this episode has gone live, which will be on Monday the 19th. We'll probably be putting a shout out soon after, later in the day, for questions about lettering. Yes, we're going to be talking about lettering on the next show. So we've moved on to the next stage.
We didn't say who the guest is, just in case we get it wrong.
Yeah. We're probably not going to announce guests, but then
it's
just a surprise.
Recorded it on Wednesday.
Yeah. But then the guest arrives, and you immediately become a fan of their work and start following them. That's what we've done so far with these shows, which has gone down really well. But anyway, if you do Facebook, then go to facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. And if you join the community group Awesome Comics Talk, there's a great group of people there. They're just there to talk comics, comic events, sometimes just have a laugh, but there's no hard selling, there's no shameless plugging. You know, if you like that, then go to other groups. That's fair enough. Everyone has to sell their comics and their Kickstarters, but in this group it's more about just sharing the love of creating comics. So
trust me, if we let every Kickstarter through, it would be 10 posts a day just Kickstarters. And that's not what we want it to be.
And the group wouldn't be as active, I don't think.
Exactly.
So just search Awesome Comics Talk, all one word, on Facebook. Thank you very much for listening to us, whether it was on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, subscribe and leave a review. Helps get the word out about this show, these wonderful creators we talk to, and all these books that we are discovering week on week.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of the things about the recommendation section. You know, the stuff that these guys talk about.
It hits my wallet.
Yep, it does indeed, quite hard. But you can also catch us on networks like Spotify, Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife. What other networks are we on, Tony?
We're on, I didn't realise this one until Dan told me about it earlier, it's Pod OWO.
That's an outtake that's not going to go on.
I'm surprised not to tell you about that one.
Normally I'm quite good with that sort of thing.
Quite versed with that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and if you're going to discuss that, if you know what that is, and if you're going to discuss it, don't discuss it with me, and DM these guys directly, because
DM Vince about oral.
No. Watch it, or you won't be on the next show.
After this week's performance, I can believe that.
Oh dear. But where can people find us online, etc.? Mr. Esmond?
Neverinthin.blogspot.co.uk or SASEZOHYZ on Twitter.
Cool. Dan?
You can find me on Twitter @VanguardComic, and you can read vanguard@vanguardcomic.com.
Nice. You can follow me on Instagram and Twitter @JesterDiablo. You can find out more about my comic at theredmousefrommars.com. And Simon, our saviour. Where can people find you?
On Twitter, it's S Robbins, and that's with one B, how it should be spelt. People with two Bs, it's never spelt that way. You're all
that
wrong.
That is strange, isn't it? Yeah.
I mean, the birds with one B. Anyway, S Robbins. I don't have an issue with that at all. No. it's S Robbins _colors on Twitter. And on Instagram, it's bastard_cut. I also, you can link through from either of those to my art station, but it's just at art station, it's just Simon Robbins with no space. So artstation.com/Simon Robbins.
Nice.
Nice.
And just for our American listeners, how do you spell colors?
With a U.
when I was researching colorists for this week, you got to put both in because,
Yeah.
Yeah, no, well, yes, I was, yeah. I have to tag everything, and every time it pains me. But no, on a footnote to that, I saw that Ryan K. Lindsay's writing something new, and he was over the moon that he could write it with all his U's in it instead of just O's. So.
God bless Ryan, and God bless all you lovely people. Now we were just halfway through a conversation before this whole conversation, this wonderful show formed into itself, which we'll probably pick up again next week. So. We're going to have to listen to the show to know what we were actually talking about before.
You kind of lost me.
That's not going to help.
No, it's not going to help at all. But don't worry, before anyone asks, oh, well, that conversation never got finished. We're aware, but we just got carried away with some actual awesomeness. So there you go. So, thank you for listening, folks. Stay tuned for the next stage of this show and spread the word about these shows, because we're all about spreading the knowledge.
Yeah,
and stay tuned for the rest of them. You may listen to this probably a year after we recorded it.
Hopefully. You might do.
Yeah, I think this info's timeless, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, they sound so convinced, don't they? But thank you again for listening. From Dan, Tony, Simon, and myself, have a brilliant week. Read loads of comics, and as always, what do they do, Dan?
Stay awesome.
Brilliant. See you, everyone.
Love you. Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye. Bye.